4, which of course means different directional patterns day and night. One interesting application from an existing facility, 860 WGOM in Marion, Indiana, is applying to go full-time with 500 watts at night. Grants to existing facilities on 910 WPRP in Ponce, Puerto Rico, night power raised to 5 kilowatts. On 1250 WLEM, Emporium, Pennsylvania, moves frequency to 650 kilohertz. There'll be 5,000 watts daytime only, non-directional. And on 1520 WYFC, Ypsilanti, Michigan, moves to 990 kilohertz, 500 watts day, 250 watts night, different patterns day and night. Scanning down through highlights from number 115's otherness column, on 540 we find that KKAR, Hesperia, California, this new station finally has been built and has been heard testing. On 760, an application for a new station in Smithfield, Missouri. There are two applications for the same facility here. Both have been dismissed. On 820, two dismissals for new stations in Weymouth, Massachusetts, and also in Whitman, Massachusetts. And on 1000 WXWY, new station in Robertsdale, Alabama, is now on the air with a country and western format. We heard that one here in Youngstown on the 9th of February. On we move to edition number 116 of AM Switch, starting with two call letter changes. On 740, KVFC Cortez, Colorado, changes to KISZ. And on 1140, the CAT, KKAT, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, changes to KATR. Three new stations were applied for in this edition. On 830 in Catoosa, Oklahoma, 1120 in Oxford, Alabama, and 1330 in Murraysville, Georgia. Two new stations were granted in this edition. They are on 1160, Oakland, New Jersey, a kilowatt day and night U4 antenna. And on 1490 in Dardanelle, Arkansas, there'll be a kilowatt day and night non-directional. Although this was listed as a construction permit in the NRC log a couple years ago, it was actually just an application then and was just granted on the 27th of January. Applications from existing facilities on 600 WKLW, Paintsville, Kentucky, would like to raise their power to 5,000 watts. On 740 WVCH in Chester, Pennsylvania, would like to raise their power to 50,000 watts, daytime only. Dave Schmidt will be glad to hear about that. Grants to existing facilities in this edition include on 890 WLPQ in Pittsburgh, Kentucky, which will have a call letter change when we get to the next edition, changing their city of license to London, Kentucky. That station, by the way, is still silent. And on 1170 WMVI, Mechanicsville, New York, gets their grant to move to 1160, 50,000 watts day, 1,000 night, and they will be U4. From the otherness column in edition 116, we find that on 660 KTNN in Window Rock, Arizona, a station which is owned by the Navajo Indian tribe, has announced an air date of the 28th of February, so that should be on by the time you're hearing this. On 760 WVNE in Leicester, Massachusetts, had a CP for a new station, let it run out, and so they are applying to reinstate that expired CP. Sometimes the FCC does that, sometimes they don't. We'll have to wait and see on that one. On 910 WMSH in Mishawaka, Indiana, CP for a new station no longer appears in the latest FCC database, so from that we conclude that that CP has been canceled. On 1030 WBZE, Indian Head, Maryland, which is suburban Washington, D.C., expected on the air soon with a religious format. On 1170 WVSG in Cornwall, New York, their application to move to 1160 was dismissed. We also suspect there's a possibility this station may be silent, although we have no confirmation from people who actually can or could hear the station. We tried to telephone them, and their telephone number has been disconnected with no forwarding number. We called the information operator, who says there is no radio station under any call letter listed anywhere in that area. Therefore, we're assuming that WVSG, Cornwall, New York, may be silent. Finally, on 1600 WTRU, Muskegon, Michigan, no question about this. We know that this station is silent pending a sale. Now let's take a look at AM switch number 117, which will be the final one for this month's edition of the audio service. Under call letter changes on 770, KGGN Valdez, Alaska becomes KCHU. On 980, WLPQ Pittsburgh, Kentucky, which is moving to London, Kentucky, is changing their call letters to WKPJ. That station, by the way, is still silent. On 1030, WWRM Sterling Heights, Michigan, becomes WRMM. On 1070, KATQ Plentywood, Montana becomes KHPN, and on 1550, WMLB Bloomfield, Connecticut, which is in the suburban Hartford area, becomes WGAB. One station application on 890 in Bernalillo, New Mexico. This competes with an existing application on that frequency for Bernalillo. And one station has been granted on 540, Ferris, Texas, 250 watts daytime only, non-directional. Applications from existing facilities on 750 KJEL in Lebanon, Missouri would like to raise their power to 5,000 watts. And on 1350 WRDJ Daleville, Alabama would like to raise their power to 5 kilowatts. Under grants to existing facilities on 1140 WBZY in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, which already has a potent signal in my area on 1140, is moving to 1200 kilohertz with 10,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night, directional nights only. On 1470 KAPS, Mount Vernon, Washington, moves to 660 kilohertz with 10,000 day, 1,000 nights. That'll be non-directional day and night. And on 1570 WYTI, Rocky Mount, Virginia, raises their power to 2,500 watts. And scanning down through otherness, in addition 117, we find that on 640 WMSO in Collierville, Tennessee, their application to move to Germantown, Tennessee, has been dismissed by the FCC. On 930 WBYG, Sandwich, Illinois, this station has been heard doing some site testing, but there is still no air date announced. On 1050 KOFY, San Mateo, California, station is silent. On 1100 WYKR, Wells River, Vermont, they are now here on 1100, formerly on 1490. On 1440 WCHB, Inkster, Michigan, their application to move to 1200 was dismissed, in the same action that granted the 1200 move to WBZY in Newcastle. And WRHX in Herndon, Virginia, their application to relocate their transmitter and change city of license to Arcola, Virginia, has been dismissed. And that's about it. Five editions this time of AM Switch for the DX Audio Service. I'm Jerry Starr, and I'll be back a little later on the audio service this month, as we run down a special feature looking at some of the standard abbreviations and terms which are used in AM Switch. Before we sign off, we'd like to send a special acknowledgement out to Tim Hendel, who lives in Miami, Florida, who is a regular listener of the audio service. Tim wrote us a letter, said some nice things about AM Switch, and we want to thank him for writing. He does mention here one comment. When mentioning new authorizations, please be sure to read the power when it is printed. As far as we know, that's standard practice. We don't normally read the powers for stations that are applied for, simply because that would take a lot more space on the tape. But any station that is granted, we try to always give you the power and also the antenna mode. So, Tim, thanks for writing. If anyone else would like to do the same, my address is Jerry Starr, in care of WHOT Radio, 401 North Blaine Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. That's it for now. I'll see you later. This is Jerry Starr for the DX Audio Service.
Heading for the tippity top of the old pop crop. That's the Dixie Cups and a former WHK pick hit of the week called The Chapel of Love with Johnny Holiday. Your old Buckeye buddy till 7 o'clock tonight.
WHK's radar weather eye spotlights the weather ahead for Maple Heights and Cleveland Heights and all the HK cousins out and about in North Olmsted. Hey, it's going to be clear and cold tonight, low 10 to 15 degrees. And tomorrow, sunny and warmer, if you can call 45 degrees warmer. Currently, it's 28 degrees in the phonometer in the sunshine.
And wonderful, wonderful WHK.
Cleveland will soon be getting a Hall of Fame building for rock and roll. In fact, local musician and promoter Jeff Heike already has an artist working on the sign he wants to erect on the site. The old WHK Radio Auditorium and office building on Cleveland's east side. The old broadcasting complex includes an auditorium, a four-story office building, two one-story wings, and a 110-car parking lot. Originally, the building was the Metropolitan Theater, an opera house which opened in 1913. WHK moved there in 1951, and in 1958 became Cleveland's first full-time rock and roll station. WHK remained the dominant rocker until late in 1967, when Metro Media mandated a change to an adult format. WHK was the good life, except on Sunday night when personality Dick Drury hosted an oldies show. By the early 70s, HK had changed again to an up-tempo adult contemporary personality format, similar to the successful format of rival WGAR. The mid-70s brought another change to a highly successful country format, and in 1977, WHK moved their studios to their present location in the Statler Office Tower. By 1984, Mallright Communications sought to supplement the format of their FM station, market leader WMMS, and the AM was changed back to the rock music they had played for nearly a decade and a half. The complex currently houses rehearsal studios for local rock bands and a video and film recording studio. In addition, Heike and a musician friend have just opened a carry-out restaurant, the Sounds Good Emporium, in one of the old storefronts. Heike is pleased with the changes that have occurred in the last few months, and with the enthusiasm and financial commitment shown by local businesses and the local development group, he is counting on the influx of young people to complete the changes in the neighborhood. The kids Heike is depending on, or even the 27-year-old musician himself, cannot possibly remember the glory days of WHK, when disc jockeys like Johnny Holiday, Al James, Ron Britton, Mad Daddy, Russ Weirdbeard Knight, Hal Baby Moore, Beatle Nick Bob Friend, or Emperor Joe Mayer graced its airwaves with hits from the WHK Fabulous 50 tune decks. Days when WHK first brought the Beatles to Cleveland, and groups like the Rolling Stones wandered through the broadcast booths. Days before radio stations lost personality and introduced mechanical spells of uninterrupted music. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum, wherever it's put, would commemorate that era. Heike believes the WHK complex, with its prominent contribution to Cleveland's rock and roll history, is an ideal location. This is Phil Wayne.
14K. You're listening to the DX Audio Service.
And now it's time to take a look at CPC tests before we flip over to Side 2. And of course, CPC tests are in Eastern Local Time. On March the 10th, which is a Monday morning, KSPO 1050 in Spokane, Washington, will be testing from 3 o'clock till 3:30 with tones, music, and IDs. Reports can be sent to Leigh Brown, chief engineer of KSPO Radio, 6019 South Crestline, Spokane, Washington, 99203. And this test was arranged by Wayne Heinen and Jackie Cole. By the way, Leigh's name is spelled L-E-I-G-H. And on March the 31st, which is a Monday morning, KPCR 1530 in Bowling Green, Missouri, will be testing from 3 o'clock till who knows when with voice IDs, code IDs, and music. Reports can be sent to J. Paul Salos, S-A-L-O-I-S, president of KPCR Radio, Box 1, Bowling Green, Missouri, 63334. And this test was arranged by Wayne Heinen and Dan Bartek for the National Radio Club. And that's our CPC test for this edition of the DX Audio Service. See you on Side 2.
W-I-X.
Our whole family listens to Wixie. We like the station, and we've always listened to Wixie.
Why continues the winning with your chance to win a piece of the rock.
Stella, what do you think rock location number one is?
Kotecki Monument.
Beg your pardon?
Kotecki Monument.
Did you know you just won a one-carat diamond worth $1,000 from Wixie? The Rock That Talks and Jamie Robinson Jewelers.
Oh, I can't believe it.
I bet you really worked hard a long time to find a location, didn't you?
I've been trying all day and just going through the phone book and working my head off. I live two streets away from Kotecki Monument. I live on West 37th and that's on Riverside on the corner. It says rock, and then I figured I looked in the phone book, and every rock of ages must have it on there, you know, the Kotecki.
Well, what do you think?
I'm just thrilled to death. I can't believe it. I'm shaking all over.
Well, you sure got it.
Oh, I can't believe it. Thank you so much.
A piece of the rock. And the winning continues.
W-I-X-Y.
And welcome back to Side 2 of this cassette, the DX Audio Service for March 1986. Now here's Bob Walker.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome to the March edition of the DX Digest. And we start this month with a report from Tim Hindle of Miami. Tim reports hearing KYST from the Houston, Texas area with a Spanish format at 1800 hours on February the 5th. He thinks they may have left their day pattern on late as he hasn't heard them since. Tim's also heard the new Jamaican on 850 and is apparently booming out with good reception most nights at 1830. And Tim also reports that Radio Reload can be heard at his location with its standard format of time pips on 914 kilohertz. And he wonders if this is a new frequency or is Radio Reload accidentally off frequency. Thanks for your report, Tim. And of course, we're always on the lookout for your receptions. My address is 45605 Timber Lane Court, number 204, in Walled Lake, Michigan, 48088. Now let's review the DX test of the past few weeks, beginning at 810 with WSJC in McGee, Mississippi, heard on December 26th in AM stereo by John Malicki in Pittsburgh, as he noted a test tone in both the left and right channels of the signal, country and western music and many IDs, this at 0215 to 0246. WSJC's test was also heard in New Jersey and tentatively in Utah. WIFX's first test of the season on December 28th was heard in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Ohio on 1,000 kHz from 0200 to 0300 with IDs, music, and mentions of the National Radio Club after WCFL in Chicago silenced their test tone. And John Herman in Oklahoma was fortunate to hear the KFJM in Grand Forks, North Dakota test on December the 16th on 1370 kilohertz, this with the test tone and three IDs at 0104. Now onward to some special items. On 630, KTKK in Sandy, Utah was noted December the 23rd at 0207 with host Logan Brand's last open forum talk show. They're the former KZJO. On 640, WFNC in Fayetteville, North Carolina was heard in Maryland with a fair signal at 1945 over the Cuban and WHLO. 740, WQSF, Williamsburg, Virginia, heard by Kermit Gary in Pennsylvania. Good in CBL's Know with news, satellite weather watch, and standards. IDing is soft 96 on January the 6th at 1700. 750 kHz CKGB Timmins, Ontario was way atop WSB on January the 19th at midnight 14, heard by Neil Wolfish in Manitoba, alternating country and western and adult contemporary music, and IDing as Telemedia Timmins and FM 92 AM 750. KXTC Clovis, California was heard December the 23rd and December the 28th in Utah with ads for Northern California and some holiday music. The station had previously been silent. On 800, KFRZ, Brigham City, Utah with a weak signal, country and western music. They're the former KBUH. 860 WGOM in Marion, Indiana on January the 27th, late at 1850 with country and western music, somehow suggesting a low post-sunset authority power was in use. Also on 860 KUTR, Salt Lake City, Utah, noted December the 23rd with their new format of LDS, standing for Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Contemporary. Though not all religious, they are designed to appeal to the members of the Mormon Church in the Salt Lake City area. They're the former KWHO and KLTQ. 960 KLZX Provo, Utah is a call letter change from KDLT with a CHR hits format on December the 22nd. 1040 WJOR St. Joseph, Tennessee is now on with a country format with 2,500 watts of power, daytime only, and the CE is requesting reports at Post Office Box 187, St. Joseph, Tennessee 38481. Also on 1040, WJTB North Ridgefield, Ohio, has been noted a few hundred hertz off frequency by Jerry Starr. On 1110, WHIM Providence, Rhode Island, is now on full-time, 5,000 watts day, 500 watts nights. 1260 KOIT San Francisco, California was noted with an ID as the new Coit with Rock Oldies. They're the former KXLR, KOIT, NKYA. On 1270 KWPR Claremore, Oklahoma was noted fair with KSSA on December the 27th with AM 1270 and legal IDs mixing music and news. 1310 CIWW in Ottawa, Ontario, noted January the 7th with their new calls. They're the former CKLY. And on 1540 WNIO Niles, Ohio, has been noticed on at 8 until 1800 with their regular schedule. They should be off at 1715 since there's no PSSAs on 1540. One can only assume this is illegal, but of course it'll certainly be checked out. One note on the international scene we made reference to just a moment ago. The new Jamaican station on 850 kHz has been noted, playing a mixture of music over the period, IDing with accented time checks with a British, not West Indian accent, and carrying JBC News. So this appears that this may be a new high-powered Jamaican on 850 kilohertz, been heard over a wide expanse of the country and as well as in Hawaii by Dr. Richard Wood, so might be one to especially be on the lookout for those of you still needing Jamaican in your logbooks. And that's going to do it this time for the DX Digest. The conditions are slowly beginning to taper down, but we'll still be here to bring the DX to you next month on the DX Audio Service.
And thank you, Bob. Now from Detroit, all the way over to the East Coast, Massachusetts to be exact, here's Paul Burkhart.
Greetings to all you fellow subscribers to the DX Audio Service. This is Paul Burkhart, B-U-R-K-H-A-R-D-T, at 560A North Main Street, apartment 302, in Leominster, L-E-O-M-I-N-S-T-E-R, Massachusetts, 01453, on January the 15th of 86. Let me first give to you, Fred, the address for the Braille monitor as you had requested it. The Braille monitor is the publication of the National Federation of the Blind. Here is the address. The Braille Monitor, M-O-N-I-T-O-R, 1800 Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230. If you would like to send a press release to the Braille Monitor, I know they would be very happy to receive it, and I know it will be published. Let me give you the article, folks, as it appeared in the Monitor Miniatures for November of 1985, the Talking Book Edition. This will be read by Larry McKeever, the voice of the Talking Book edition of the Braille Monitor. Stand by.
New magazine. Paul Burkhart, a member of the NFB of Massachusetts, writes, Fred Vobbe, V-O-B-B-E, 706 McKenzie, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835, has inaugurated a new service to blind AM radio enthusiasts. It's called the DX Audio Service and is a regular feature of the National Radio Club. The publication has been in existence since April 1985, but Fred is looking for ways to get the news out about his new cassette service. The subscription price for 12 issues is $25 per year. If interested, contact Fred Vobbe.
Fred, you had asked me to give you the listings or the addresses of other magazines for the blind. Right now, I'm just giving you the list for the address and name of the Braille Monitor because that magazine is very, very widely distributed and read by many, many blind people across the country. And since I'm a part of the National Federation of the Blind, I thought I'd give that to you now. And I just hope that that will prove to be beneficial to you and the rest of the DX Audio Service. That's all I have from here, folks, and take care all of you and good health to all. Paul Burkhart saying goodbye for now, and I'm turning it back to Mr. Fred Valby. Fred, take it away, please.
Thank you very much, Paul. You know, Cuban interference has caused everyone a lot of problems, and especially in Puerto Rico. Now there might be an answer to that, and John Bowker has this story.
Well, Fred, I imagine we're going to hear a lot more from some of the others about this, but just as sort of a news bulletin at this point in the DX audio service, yes, indeed, the FCC has decided that at least in Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, they've got to do something about, first of all, the area of coverage of some of the stations, and secondly, the area over which interference is being received, particularly from the Cubans. So the channels that have been most affected by this are what we have come to know as the graveyard channels 1230, 1240, 1340, 1400, 1450, and 1490. Now, those channels in Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands are being reclassified as Class 3 channels, and that means the maximum permissible power can be as high as 50,000 watts in those areas. Boy, if that isn't a DX opportunity.
Yes, it is, John. A very good DX opportunity for at least myself, who doesn't have any stations listed in my log in Puerto Rico. However, I will have to say that if I hear them more than once or twice a week, they could be classified a pest instead of a Class 3. Anyways, let's get right over to Jerry Starr again, who has some information for us on the AM Switch column. Jerry?
Hi again. Jerry Starr back with an AM Switch special feature. Some listeners of AM Switch have written to inquire about the various abbreviations and terms we use in AM Switch columns. They are all standard. They have been used for a number of years in the National Radio Club's DX News, but to some people who have learned about DX News through the audio service, they may be unusual or, in some cases, incomprehensible. So quickly, we're going to run down through the definitions of the various abbreviations used, and also comments on some of the terms we use from time to time. Probably most confusing to the uninitiated are the antenna mode designations. There are a number of these. The ones that are used most frequently are D1, which is a daytime non-directional station, and D3, which is a daytime directional station. U indicates unlimited or full time, and the U designations used most frequently are U1, which is non-directional day and night, U2 is directional night only, U3 uses the same directional pattern day and night, U4 uses different patterns day and night, and U5 pops up once in a while, especially on some of the graveyard frequencies. That is a station that is directional daytime and non-directional at night. Some of the other terms and abbreviations we use, including CP, that stands for construction permit, a permit that is granted to an applicant to construct a new station, or granted to an existing station to make major changes, such as changes in frequency or changes in power relocating transmitter and things of that sort. PSA stands for Pre-Sunrise Authority. Many daytime stations are permitted to begin their broadcast day at 6 a.m. year-round, whether the sun has come up or not. However, as daytimers, they must use, in cases, a reduced power between the time they sign on and the time the sun comes up. Maximum power for any PSA is 500 watts. In many cases, there are odd and very low powers, such as 1.2 and 7.6 watts. PSSA is the post-sunset authorization. This is newer than PSA. The PSSAs are the same thing on the other end of the day. Certain stations are authorized to operate after sunset, even though they hold a daytime license. Depending on the station or the frequency, it may last from as long as 15 extra minutes up to 2 hours after local sunset, with power levels as little as a few watts, but no more than 500 watts. There are a few stations on frequencies, regional frequencies, which have three or four different power levels in their PSSA, which change either with time or with the month. It can be very confusing. Critical hours are the first 2 hours after sunrise and the last 2 hours before sunset, a time period when, although it's still daytime, much signal propagation is beginning by skywave. It's a very unsettled time for propagation, and during that period, some stations must reduce power or, in a few cases, change antenna patterns to prevent interference to the dominant station on their frequency during the critical hours. An example would be a daytime station that is licensed to 5,000 watts with 500 watts critical hours. In other words, the first 2 hours after sunrise, they can only operate with 500 watts, then switch to the full 5 kilowatts, and then the last 2 hours they're on the air before sunset, they must again switch back to the 500 watts. Critical hours power come in odd powers, too. That was only an example. Now let's take a look at some of the terms we use in AM switch. While most of the terms we use are fairly self-evident, there are some which may be confusing. In particular, when we're talking about applications or construction permits, sometimes we'll use the words returned, dismissed, denied, and canceled. On the surface, those may all seem to mean basically the same thing, when actually, each one is a separate and discrete action by the FCC, and here is the difference. First of all, returned. This term is used in conjunction with an application procedure, whether it be for a new station or technical changes. Now, when the FCC receives an application that is incomplete or doesn't have enough information or has the inappropriate lines filled in or left blank or whatever, the application is returned to the applicant, so corrections or additions can be made. Now, this doesn't in any way mean the application is dead. As a matter of fact, the majority of station applications are returned at least once. We feel, due to the fact that absolutely nobody can understand government paperwork enough to do it right the first time. A little more serious than that is dismissed. After an application for a new station or application for changes at an existing station has gone through all the stages at the FCC, one of two things happen. It is either granted, in other words, permission is given to do whatever was requested, or it is dismissed. Once an application is dismissed, it is in effect dead, although there are certain types of court appeals for rehearing. These are rarely used, since the cost of arguing an application before a federal court are astronomical. If, however, it is appealed to the court, and the court turns it down, in other words, if they concur with a dismissal by the FCC, then it is said to be denied. This is a term we rarely have to use, because few stations can afford to take it to court. Canceled, as you might guess from the word, means exactly that. After an applicant has been granted, it can still be canceled, either by request of the grantee or by the FCC. Usually, the FCC will cancel a construction permit after a certain time to complete the station has expired without the changes being made or the station being built. Now, the grantee may have difficulty in locating land for a transmitter site, may fall into financial troubles, or for whatever reason decide not to make the change or build the station. In that case, he can request the FCC to cancel the CP, and it goes off into Never Never Land forever and is also removed from the FCC database. So there you have the subtle differences between returned, dismissed, denied, and canceled. That about wraps up our special feature from AM Switch, a look at terms and abbreviations we use from week to week. If there are more we happen to use which have you befuddled or confused, please write us and we'll try to clear it up for you. Our address once again is Jerry Starr, in care of WHOT Radio, 401 North Blaine Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. That's it for now. I'll see you next month, and once again, here's Frederick.
Thank you very much, Jerry. You know, as a person who is often annoyed at receiver manufacturers and those in the broadcasting business who really have no right in even setting foot in a radio station, I was pleased by a recent article in Radio World magazine written by Mark Pearsons. Mark is an engineering consultant and president of M.W. Pearson Associates of Brainerd, Minnesota, and he wrote an article in the January 1st edition of Radio World magazine about Pioneer's KEA 433 AM car radio. Now, although I can't pass judgment on this radio, as I've never heard it nor played with it, I feel that Mark's article bears some forefront notice. Now, here's some excerpts from his article. Quote, Pioneer has been making good aftermarket car radios for quite a while. The Pioneer KEA 433 AM car radio is, in my opinion, one of the best car radios built. It is a microprocessor-controlled, digitally tuned CQAM AM stereo, FM stereo, and stereo cassette unit. I ordered one to try it out. Before installing it in my car, I took a peek inside. The radio is well-built and repairable. A service manual, ordered separately for about $8, provided more than enough information. Large 3 and 4 color cutaway views of the circuit cards made component locating easy. Pioneer has even gone to the trouble of explaining how each section of the radio works, and how, for instance, AM stereo is broadcast and decoded. Complete alignment procedures are spelled out as well. Wiring terminates on plugs and jacks. Every wire is shown in this documentation. Unquote. How many radio manufacturers can you say take the time to document their products? It took me well over 7.5 hours and $45 in phone and postage charges just to get a simple answer to a question on a Ford car radio, and I was calling Ford headquarters in Dearborn. Mark went into great detail on the performance of the radio in the FM band, but let's jump ahead to AM performance features. Quote, the AM section of the Pioneer KEA-433 AM car radio has some interesting features. First, full electronic tuning eliminates the need for an antenna trimmer capacitor. The AM front end is tuned to a specific frequency of interest. A dual bandwidth IF section gives a user the ability to hear high frequency on AM like he's never heard before. The specifications say frequency response is 3 dB down at 6 kHz. This isn't bad considering the kind of bandwidth AM radios have traditionally had. The bandwidth must be wide enough because Pioneer has included a pair of 10 kHz adjacent channel whistle filters at the output of the stereo IC decoder. Unquote. The radio can't be all that bad, because in the article which I typed in DX News, I asked people to write me and let me know what they thought about the radio if they've had a chance to play with it. Well, I received a letter today from Al Resnick, who is the chief engineer of WLS in Chicago, and it also happens to be a National Radio Club member. Al said that the radio is pretty decent and sent along some specifications. And guess what? On paper, it looks good. If you'd like to contact Mark Pearsons and comment about his article, or even find out some more information about it, you can call him at area code 218-829-1326. Now here's John Bowker with the Travelogue.
Well, okay, Fred Vobey. As a matter of fact, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is John Bowker. And the travelogues we've been putting together for you each month have taken you through southern New England and northern New England. They've taken you through portions of North Carolina, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania. What have I skipped? Michigan, of course. But this time we're going to be doing things a little bit differently, because I have been fortunate enough ever since the early 70s to have a cassette tape recorder in my car as I drive around on both social and family and business trips all over. As a matter of fact, we've driven as far as California from our home in New Jersey since that time period. And we don't record every hour on the hour, but we come awful close. As a matter of fact, we took a trip to Nashville, Tennessee in 1976. I did with my two boys, and we had three tape recorders running there, and we didn't miss a station ID on the hour during the day and early evening hours for about 3 days. And then we got bored. However, today we're going to, as I say, have things a little different here in the March DX audio service, in that this is not just a nice uniform trip from point A to point B, but a collection of station IDs, both singing jingles and rather dull, straightforward announcers with beautiful voices giving the call signs and the cities of identity. So here we are with station breaks that I collected in 1974, starting in the summer. This would have been about June of 1974. We're just going to let the tape run for a minute or so and see if you pick up any new stations for your collection. I hope you enjoy it.
This is Music 74 from WWSR, St. Albans, Vermont.
Radio Montreal, CJ80.
This is Vermont. WBMT, Burlington. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the honor roll of hits.
WBMT, Burlington.
Ted Lasides with Just Plain Jazz follows news from WQBK and WQBK-FM Rensselaer from UPI. It's 4 p.m.
WGHQ Kingston, rated PG.
The sound of entertainment.
WCAR at 5:30.
Million-selling single from his million-selling album. It's 7:09 on WCAR. This is Lou Henrietti on another nice day in Detroit. Fair, warm, and humid tonight with a low of 65, partly cloudy, and warm and humid.
Tonight with an overnight low of 70 degrees expected. A little cooler tomorrow on Friday, they're saying, and fair. Presently, Toledo Express shows 72 degrees. Downtown at WCWA is 73 degrees. Music from Neil Diamond.
Barometric pressure at 30.12. We have cloudy skies downtown, 76 degrees, mostly cloudy skies at KCI. They report 74.
1480 KBBM. WEAL Greensboro, where you hear Sounder with Gil Harris and Lee Miller.
Tom Jones with Outlaw, taking us to noon report time. WSJS in Winston-Salem.
WHBE and WHBE-FM, High Point.
1 o'clock.
You know, I could listen to those all day. Oh, boy, I'm sure you couldn't, however. But do you realize we went through two Burlingtons in that one little synopsis there? Burlington, North Carolina, and Burlington, Vermont. We went to where? Toledo, Detroit, North Carolina, Northern New England, up and down the Hudson River Valley. That would have cost you on People's Express over $39 for the equivalent trip. We're going to be back with a few more of these disjointed breaks. I really hope you enjoy them on the DX audio service. Fred?
Key to the latest news now is on the air. Key tuned for sports and views now from everywhere.
Some memories courtesy of Monitor and the NBC Radio Network. And of course, John Bowker will be back with us next month with another edition of the Travelogue here on the DX Audio Service. Large magnetic storm hit the area recently. It was one of the strongest geomagnetic storms since 1976, and it disrupted communications across much of northern United States back in February. The disruption of the Earth's normal magnetic fields meant problems for radio and aircraft and satellite communications, and also meant some northern lights. In a geomagnetic storm, a surge of energy from the sun enters the Earth's magnetic field and causes all sorts of electrical interferences. With such phenomena, it also means difficulties with power distribution and phone lines. Engineers monitoring such systems can make adjustments to deal with the problems. Well, the Aurora Borealis from Saturday's storm was expected to be overhead in the latitude that encompassed both New York and Chicago. What did this mean for normal DXers? Well, it meant you couldn't really hear anything except Latin stations coming in from the south. Interesting as it may seem. Well, that about wraps up this edition of the DX Audio Service, but before we skedaddle out, I'd like to remind you about our new dues structure here at the Audio Service. You can subscribe to the DX Audio Service in two different ways. First of all, you can subscribe by the normal method of $25 per year, which gets you the cassettes. You keep the cassettes, Maxell UDXL2s, which taint bad for the price, well, number one, and of course, the great DX Audio Service, which you get to hear right on the cassette. Then the second way you can receive the audio service is by the $12 subscription. And we furnish you with one cassette. You send that cassette back after you've listened to it, and it has to be back here to headquarters by the 20th of the month. We erase it and put a new audio service on it for you and send it right back to you. It gives you a little price break from the normal $25 dues structure. So it's your choice, $25 a year or $12 a year. And of course, be sure to tell your friends about the DX audio service and spread the word about the audio service to all DXers. Well, Tony Fitzherbert had a profile last month on WVOI, XWANR, XWGOR, XWTU, and XWTTO. And during my internship at WTTO, there was a crazy guy by the name of Tom Williams. And Tom was a real good friend, but as radio people all do, they kind of go their separate ways and you never hear from them again. Well, about a week ago, I received a cassette from a friend of mine out west, and lo and behold, here's Tom Williams with another name, and I thought you'd like to hear what Tom's doing these days after he worked at Country, WTUU, and WTTO. Give a listen, and we'll see you next month on the first anniversary edition of the DX Audio Service and also the April Fool's edition. Bye-bye.
A-R-K-R-K-R-I-Z! Ain't been the same since he hung 11 at Big Sur. That's Jay Stone, 508 at Chris. K-R-I-Z. Mamado, 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 Mamado. Take my coat of chrome away. You do, Mom, and I'll set your wedgies on fire. I promise 513 and a stoner. K-R-I-Z. Tonight, sometime after 10, man, you'll hear Tony Evans honking Chicago. I promise. Rockin' pneumonia and a boogie-woogie flu. K-R-I-Z, Chris.
The DX Audio Service is a copyrighted production and may not be copied in whole or part without the express written permission of the National Radio Club, Post Office Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin, 53523.